Fascia is an absolutely amazing system. Years ago, most people didn't know what fascia was. Where today, if you're in the health, wellness, and fitness industry, most know what this term means. Hi, my name is Deanna Hansen. I am the founder of Fluid Isometrics and Block Therapy.
And my name is Quinn Castellane. I'm the VP of Block Therapy and Deanna's nephew. Welcome to the Fascia Masters podcast.
Fascia is the connective tissue that holds our entire body together. The fascia system is involved in every aspect of your health, from pain, size and shape, how you age, athletic performance and recovery, and even managing trauma and emotions. The list goes on. When you learn how to decompress your fascia, you experience incredible changes to every level of your being.
The Fascia Masters podcast discusses everything fascia and is dedicated to empowering you with the knowledge you need to become your own self-care advocate. In this episode, we discuss the difference between scar tissue and adhesions, how they both affect blood and energy flow in the body, but also how they can be addressed to restore optimal circulation for fluids and energy. So sit back and relax and enjoy this episode. Welcome to another episode of the Fascia Masters podcast. Today we're going to be talking about the difference between scar tissue and adhesions, the adhesions that build up within our fascia system. So it's becoming more of a common question, I would say, and people just really want to know, because if you have a scar from an injury, from a cut, from whatever form of injury, surgery, how is that really different than adhesions that build up within our connective tissue? So that's the main topic of today's discussion, which is really interesting to me. And that's pretty much the question. So to start off, what is the main difference between scar tissue and then adhesions that build up in our fascia system?
So just to kind of take you on a bit of a different angle, I'm going to first share what's similar. And what's similar between the two is that they're both essentially made up of collagen. So we know that with scar tissue, it's this inelastic tissue that doesn't have that same mobility, doesn't have that same life. It feels rubbery. It doesn't have that same coloring. And so basically what happens with an injury or a surgery, it's an in-the-moment kind of a blow. You sprain your ankle, or again, as you say, you cut yourself, or a surgery is, again, cutting through layers. So the second law of thermodynamics is nature abhors a gradient, which means when there's a gap in the system, nature's going to fill it in. So if we tear a muscle, tear a ligament, break a bone, that's a gap. So what the body does is it sends inflammation to rebuild the tissue. Now, how we handle that inflammation will have a very different effect if we treat it the way conventionally we do, which is through icing and immobilization, or if we treat it the way we teach people to, which is to actually support the inflammatory process. So if we treat it conventionally, so here we've got this gap in the system. Now, this inflammation is being sent to rebuild tissue, but if we actually stop it, now we're stopping the ability for the body to rebuild.
And by stopping, you mean primarily icing?
Primarily icing or limiting range of motion. Then we're basically slowing down the flow. And what we really want to be doing is assisting that flow as opposed to slowing it down. But if we do slow it down, the body's recognizing that, well, here's this gap and I've got to fill in the gap. So if we're not supporting inflammation, which I'll talk about in a moment, ultimately what's happening is the collagen in the surrounding area on the fascia, it gets dumped in to this gap so it can fill it in, kind of like filling in a pothole.
Yeah.
Now, the challenge with that is now we have a scar. And as we know, scars don't have that elastability because it's in the fascia, there's this combination of elastin and collagen. The elastin allows for mobility. The collagen creates the building blocks, the structure. When it's balanced, we have this wonderful opportunity to have a supported body that has range of motion. However, when the collagen starts to migrate away from balance, and again, if we've got a gap, the collagen in the surrounding areas is going to start to dump in to fill in this space. Now we have this area of restriction. It would be like if I cut out a hole from my shirt and then I sewed it up. Right. The shirt isn't the same shape anymore. I've actually taken out some of that shape. So that's going to manipulate the way a joint works or the way the tissue moves and flows.
Or even if you just cut your shirt with a knife or with scissors,
yeah,
and then you sew it back up.
Yes.
The shirt's not how it originally was. You're going to feel a pretty intense restriction, especially now with shirts. There's some form of stretch to it.
Exactly. Yes. So if we actually assist the inflammatory process, the body's ingenious in its design. So it knows how to rebuild an area, but we need to support that process. So if we are baking a cake and we add in the raw ingredients, flour, sugar, butter, oil, whatever, egg, yeah, mix it up, you get batter. Mm-hmm. If you put batter in the freezer, you have frozen batter. But if you put batter in the oven, you bake cake. And it takes heat and energy in order to change those raw materials into that cake. Mm. So the body knows exactly, like if we sprain an ankle again or break anything, the body knows what's required to repair and it will send what's needed for that repair. So what we want to do is we want to support that inflammation through understanding how to breathe, because that's really what's going to drive the fluids and support the removal of the toxins and the debris from an injury, as well as supporting the driving of the oxygen and the proteins that are going to help to rebuild. But we need to support that process through breathing, as well as through ensuring that the channels toward that area of breakage are open and available. So if it's all the way down to your foot, you want to make sure that the flow all the way through the hip flexor, the leg, the back of the knee, into the calf, all the way down is open. Because as soon as we have an injury, it's like a car crash, we've got debris. And we got to get that debris out of the way in order for that inflammation to be able to properly get sent there without obstruction and to efficiently rebuild itself. Mm. So scar tissue, again, from a blow of some certain kind, is an in-the-moment thing when suddenly, if done the conventional way, you have, again, this big dumping of adhesion or of collagen, sorry. So how adhesions differ.
And before we jump into the adhesions,
yeah,
so let's say you have a cut or a surgery. Now you have a scar, a visible scar. If we were to address it, let's call it our approach. I don't want to say like properly, but like
through fascia decompression.
Through fascia decompression, supporting the injury, supporting the flow, then can you, I know the answer, like you can mitigate scars from actually developing. But let's say you already have a scar. Can you somehow release all of that collagen that's caught up and like mitigate the scar, if not get rid of it and reintegrate that tissue? Or is it kind of like dead, frozen, it's done its job?
So I always like to say in a living body, there's no dead tissue. There's only tissue in hibernation. Tissue that doesn't have an active blood supply. So when we're dealing with a scar that's been created through injury or surgery, now what we have is a netting that got created, a communication between the collagen, but they're still independent building blocks. It's not just this one elasticy band. Mm. So what we need to do is we need to move into that tissue by way in which it was formed. And there's no straight lines in nature. Energy moves in waves and spirals. Also, the way that the body ages, it spirals down. The way the scars form, it doesn't just fuse together. It's a spiraling and an intertangling of adhesion, of that collagen, that creates this magnetic seal, essentially. So if you had two magnets a far enough distance apart, they don't have an attraction toward each other. Bring them close enough together, they seal with the force. Now, if you've got magnets big enough, try to pull them apart. Almost impossible, if not impossible, depending on their size and their strength. But you can twist them apart and shear them apart.
Shear pull.
So it's the shearing action that is the key, because as soon as we start to shear in the density, then we can start to move through those layers and create that separation. Same as, I mean, think of opening a bottle of wine. If you try to drive something straight through it, you know, we're not going to get very far moving something through that dense cork. But if we spiral the cork screw, literally screwing it in, then we can with ease go through the layers.
Yeah.
And we ultimately want to get to those deepest layers, because scars, as soon as they form, it's denser tissue than where there's space and where there's life. So then gravity's going to keep gripping it and twisting you down. So collagen continues to be attracted to the scars. The scars will really grow and not just grow on the surface. They're going to grow in the depths, and they're going to grip and adhere to bone, because as we keep falling into that scar, which again is denser, and now we've changed the alignment of the body because of that scar, it's going to continue to accumulate like a gravity, more and more of that which it is, which is collagen.
So you may have answered this, but why is it that the collagen wants to attract more collagen, more of that scar tissue?
Because it's the building block. So because it's dense, gravity grips density. Like think of two planets. I mean, they're attracted by gravity, right? Like gravity attracts gravity, or mass attracts mass. Mm. So because the collagen has a greater density in the tissue, it keeps the gravity keeps pulling us down. So we keep getting pulled further and further away from alignment. And as we do that, the body's going to continue to create more building blocks around the scar. So this is where the adhesions also come in.
I was just going to say,
it's like kind of two parts of the same, same thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So then.
And I think we'll get more clear on that when we start discussing adhesion and how that works.
Yeah. So let's shift now to adhesions. So you explained scars, how scars can form from some sort of injury, surgery, whatever.
Yeah.
Now, the development of almost like a slow growing adhesion, which could almost turn into, I'll let you chat about that, but can almost turn into something similar to a scar or scar tissue. So how is that building up? Like how are these adhesions building up so powerfully in our fascia system?
So when we are perfectly aligned, and no one is, let's just say though, we've got this perfect body where every cell is in its exact correct space. If that's the case, the fascia, which connects every single cell together, it is perfectly balanced with collagen and elastin. And again, the two together work to create mobility and stability. So as long as we support proper postural foundations, we don't have to have a migration of collagen to create building blocks, to create false walls and false floors. So as I start tipping off balance, okay, so I'm right-handed, and let's say I'm sitting in front of a computer and I'm always leaning over to my left side so I can use my mouse on my right side. Now, over time, I don't just collapse into one side and then come back up and create correct balance, because over time, we fall into these postures and they become our habit.
Yeah.
So if I'm sitting in this slumped position for months, years, decades, now the collagen starts to migrate from its balance to create a false wall or false floor. Because again, these are the building blocks. And if I don't have some kind of a compensation happening in my body, I'm going to fall off my chair or tip over and land on my face. So the body's designed to, you know, keep us protected, to stay upright. So as I start tipping off balance, there's a shifting or a migration of that collagen. So the false walls and the false floors get created. If we have proper postural foundations, we support our cellular structure, and then we don't need, again, for that migration to happen. But if we don't, and people just aren't trained to, then we start to have this migration and this buildup. And in the front of the body, typically, is where it's going to start, because we age in a forward rotational direction. We don't age backward. So all this collagen migrates to the front, and you can feel it in your body. You can feel these very dense, hard areas if you're palpating your tissue. You can feel, especially in the calves, how hard they get.
Yeah.
But this is a continual formation. So also, like, this is where the whole thing gets wrapped together, and it's a really interesting conversation, because as we start to tip off balance, now we are shifting in our breath as well. Because as soon as I don't have that optimal core space for proper diaphragmatic breathing, I start to shift my breath. Maybe I'm using part of the diaphragm, but maybe now I'm pulling more air in from the muscles of the upper chest, or maybe I have some traumatic event or injury and I go into full freeze mode and I'm breathing solely from the muscles of the upper chest. But either way, now that's adding to the tissue temperature, because adhesion development is kind of like, you know, in the winter when you see on the windows the frost formation, and it keeps growing and growing and growing the colder that it gets. That's what happens in the body. Is the adhesions have to continue to migrate, because if we're not breathing properly, now the cells aren't getting full amounts of oxygen, so they start to deflate. So that balloon that's fully blown up, that's round, almost defying gravity, that's how our cells should be if we have full proper diaphragmatic breathing. But because we don't, over time, cells start to compress, they become wrinkly, they become heavy and dense, attract dirt and debris. So we start to also lose height, lose internal space because of that lack of breath. So it's the combination of the unconscious posture combined with the incorrect breathing that kind of create this perfect storm for the adhesions to develop throughout the body. And where we are the most cold is where those adhesions are going to create, be drawn to mostly. Because again, that's what happens is it's literally formation of frost essentially in the body. And that's what it feels like. You can feel you've got cold hands, you've got cold feet, you don't have flow. So instead of it being like a line where you have like a tear or a cut, it's literally riddled throughout all of the tissue and it's entangled, and then it grips to everything in its path to create stability. So sometimes you can like look at an ankle joint and the person has little to no mobility in that ankle joint because the adhesions have literally locked that joint in that freeze mode.
And I think it's important that people understand how the fascia is made up, because if it is this continually moving, evolving, three-dimensional webby matrix, like it's not like a muscle. It doesn't have a singular job where it's like, okay, I'm going to contract and expand. Sure, the fascia does that, but it's a lot more kind of complicated because it's a web. It's not like there's information necessarily put in there to say you have one job to do this, like contract and expand the muscle. No. It's doing this throughout the entire body based off of your movements, based off of your postural habits, based off of your breath, based off of your hydration. Like it's all, yeah, it's all part of it. So if you have limited restriction in your ankle, again, that's not going to be caused from the ankle though necessarily. It could also be caused from the foot. It could be issues with the calves. It could be even if the hip joint was misaligned, then that could affect the knee and vice versa.
Yep.
So that's why it's also interesting when you're trying to address an issue such as, let's call it a frozen ankle, then you can't just work in the ankle. That's not where the issue was caused. And that's going to the whole idea of cause sites and pain sites. But I did want to ask this question. So collagen and elastin, it primarily makes up fascia.
Yeah.
Now, if the collagen's migrating somewhere, where's the elastin going?
The elastin stays. It's the fabric of everything. So I always try to like, you know, envision different ways of describing things. So like think of a chessboard. If you've got this like chessboard and each square has, sorry, let's call it a checkerboard just for my brain.
Yeah.
Each square has a checker on it. Mm-hmm. That's balance, right? So now let's say we stack a whole bunch of the checkers over on one side, because now maybe we lift up the board and the board is starting to tip. Mm. So then all of the checkers, they start to fall and they go to where the gravity is. And now we've got all these checkers over here in this one area, and that, but we still have the board. Mm-hmm. But the checkers are over here.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
So the board is the elastin and the checkers is the collagen.
Yeah. Or, you know, also like I think, you know, it's fascinating because the collagen is here again as a response network to what's coming into the body. So if you get punched, there's going to be an equal and opposite punch back because everything is balanced, right? So you get this force coming into the body.
Too much injury.
Yeah. And then the collagen, like it's like you've like the collagen are like the workers almost. They're the structure, the building blocks, the workers. So they're going to rush to that area of impact to create like, oh, here we need a wall because we just had a force come in. So I remember years ago when I was working with a quadriplegic, you know, it suddenly came to me like the injury is no different than a sprained ankle. It's just the amount of force in and the depth of damage and where it occurred. So if you have a sprained ankle and again, you tear ligaments or tendons in your ankle, whatever it is, a sprain or a strain. Now, once you have a tear, if we don't heal that properly, the ends of like, let's say you have a full rupture. If that doesn't get healed immediately and properly and right away, those ends are going to start to get plasticky. They're going to get hard, kind of like, you know, a loaf of bread getting stale.
Yeah.
So if you have sustained enough of a force to have your spinal cord, and now there's a paralysis, Now that same thing happens inside, like these ends that aren't connecting, they're going to become hard because they don't have that life. They're going to get scarred over and they lost the connection.
Can't find the connection.
Because everything's magnetic. Our body wants to be aligned. Everything wants to be in its rightful position, but we need to give it the energy in order for that to happen. Mm-hmm. So, and interesting, if you look at the difference too, like talking about flow, if you had a beaver dam in a river, that would be an example of a scar created from an injury or a surgery in the moment. Where if you have, like in Winnipeg, you get the river that's starting to cool down and eventually freeze, it's a slow flow, mm-hmm. a slow decrease in flow. Like it just doesn't go from like totally fluid to frozen overnight. There's a process of getting colder and everything slows down and then eventually the ice starts to form. There's always flow to some degree, but it's diminished yeah. significantly. So that's the difference. But then, you know, when you're looking at the body, that scar, that beaver dam, eventually will create that, you know, slow flow, which will also create more adhesions on the other side, if that makes sense.
So you're saying like that's the scar is the beaver dam and it's going to have to work around that scar.
Yeah, yeah. So the flow is going to have just like with water.
Yeah.
You know, if it's in the way, water's going to find its different route to go. It's yeah. still going to flow,
and like
but it might slow down because maybe right. you like it's going to be a trickle instead of like a, you know, fast thriving river.
Right.
And then that trickle, because now we don't have optimal flow. Now we don't have the ability to have everything as clean. And that trickle, because now we, instead of having a straight line of movement and it's having to go around things, now we're creating eddies and currents. That are going to...
What are eddies?
Eddies are the spiral things that you see in the water, like those little currents.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
And that's going to attract debris and garbage. And then that's what we see. So like if you have a mole or a bunch of moles coming up on an area of your body, you're like that's an indicator that there's blocked flow inside and now stuff isn't getting processed properly through the body and it's...
Toxicity.
Coming out.
Right.
The surface.
Right. So... Okay, so we have the idea of, and we understand scars, how they form. So pretty well, the adhesions that build up in our fascia is like a very slow forming scar.
Yes.
But maybe not necessarily.
Throughout.
Right. So it's a little bit more complicated. It's not as like black and white where it's like, okay, yeah. you got an injury. There's scar tissue. There's the collagen. It's sealing up that gradient.
Yeah.
And then kind of locking it in place where we are unintentionally falling out of alignment, then the collagen starts to migrate grip, but it doesn't happen in a linear way such as a scar. It happens in more of a complex way how our fascia's moving based off of how we position ourselves throughout the day, our habits, yep. our sports we play, whatever we do. And then that just creates all these grips throughout the body. Now, depending on the density of the adhesion is going to be based person to person. Because, correct?
So the density is going to be like, yes. So if
density or severity of the adhesions that you're developing,
yeah,
it's going to be different person to person.
For sure, because each person's going to be breathing differently. So again, it comes down to tissue temperature. And if we're really weak diaphragmatic breathers and we're just breathing through the muscles of the upper chest, our feet and our calves are going to be very cold. They're going to be riddled with adhesion. Where somebody that's breathing more strongly, you know, they're going to have a higher rate of pulling those toxins away from the tissue and feeding those tissues. So that will change dramatically as well. I mean, what do? Are we active in life? Are we moving our bodies or are we sitting in front of a computer all day? Are we feeding ourselves with good fats that assist mobilization within the body? Or are we eating garbage food like bad fats that are going to clog the liver and then clog everything else?
Right.
So, I mean, like health in general is always a factor and clean, good eating, sleeping, hydrating properly, like all these things matter as to what's going on. But from the perspective of who's going to form the most adhesions in their body, I would say the most important thing is the breath because it really comes down to tissue temperature. And the less we breathe, the colder that we are. And the colder that we are, the more we are like the frozen Winnipeg River where it's like, you know, you can drive on it.
Yeah. And it's funny because, again, I think I mentioned this in the previous podcast, but it's at times hard for me to grasp the idea how the breath can play such a big role in how your body accumulates these adhesions. But again, it was still reinforcing in the book, breath, how important that really is. Because I also said this on the previous episode, but it's important. And it's this similar saying where you say form creates
function.
Function creates form. Yeah. It's like your breath dictates your posture, but your posture also dictates your breath. So if you are breathing properly, then your rib cage is in a different alignment right off the bat.
Yeah.
And then now you're allowing your body to exhale the carbon dioxide out efficiently, pull in the oxygen in efficiently, so that you can actually move it throughout the body. Because if you're not breathing properly, then the oxygen is going to have a very difficult time getting to its destination.
And I mean, you can even look at it as simply as horsepower. You know, certain engines have a higher horsepower, which means they've got more power to like speed the car or whatever. If you've got a trolling motor on a boat, I'm just throwing terms out because as if I know, but let's say it's 1 horsepower
yeah.
compared to 10 horsepower for like a real like awesome inboard motor.
Yeah.
So people are driving their bodies with the 1 horsepower, that upper chest breath, instead of that like really awesome engine that we have. And 1 horse can only pull so much compared to 10 horses.
Yeah.
And so that's the difference. And when it comes down to mobilizing stuff in the body, it's the horsepower that we have to mobilize it. And if we're only using the 1 horsepower, we're not going to be getting down to the feet, which is the furthest from these upper chest muscles.
So let's play out a couple scenarios. So let's say you're relatively young. You haven't accumulated much age.
Much like trauma yet.
Trauma, age, injury, all this stuff. What is the best thing we can do to prevent the body? Okay, you already answered that question. But other than the breath, we'll say to prevent the body from accumulating these adhesions. So would you say movement, moving while, like if you are at a desk job, getting up every 20, 30 minutes, moving around, like what are some, because I have certain things that I would recommend, but what would you recommend to help prevent these adhesions from developing?
Well, and you know, that's such a great question because moving is very general. And because we're dominant on one side, if it's like, okay, I'm going to go and my exercise of choice, I want to go and play tennis.
Right.
If I go and play tennis every day and that's how I move, I'm moving my body in a very asymmetrical manner. So that asymmetry is going to create imbalances in the body and it's going to force adhesion to areas of stability. Because if I'm going to always be using that right side of my body to do the majority of the work and this other side of my body is just kind of the anchor so I don't fall, the collagen is going to have to migrate to create that anchoring so that I've got the ability for the, you know, the balance of collagen and elastin over here, but then there's going to be like a pulling away. So over time, that's actually going to create a lot of issues and a lot of problems.
Would you say that playing an asymmetrical sport is better than doing nothing?
Well, you know, maybe initially, but I mean, I've seen so many clients that have done this, that long term, you know, the athlete of the young can often be the less healthy version as they get older.
And it makes sense because let's say movement, heat, breathing, oxygen, removal of carbon dioxide and waste, fascia decompression, all these things can help mobilize the body. So let's say you are playing something asymmetrical, golf, tennis, racket sports, whatever it is, and you're playing that, let's say seriously for 20 years. Now, every time you're going, that movement is probably going to help loosen up certain areas, but it's also going to be creating that density because
it's creating a groove.
It's creating a groove, absolutely. Yeah. But you're also, when you're playing an intense sport, you're still going to have that micro tearing in your tissue. And then all these micro tearings are kind of like a minuscule injury within the body.
Yeah.
And then your body has to go and repair that. If it's not repaired properly, it can form these little adhesions. So then these adhesions start building up more and more, but then you take a day or two rest, your body recovers, but it recovers from where those tears were. Then you go and you play tennis. Now you're opening it back up a little bit and creating some mobility, but then you could have caused more injury. So then it's repairing and it's kind of slowly locking you in a posture where I totally agree. So then 20 years, 30, 40, however many years later, depending, of course, on the severity and how often you were playing and how intense you were. But yeah, I can see if you go from playing a ton and then you really slow down or even stop, then your body's going to start being locked in this asymmetrical way, and then that can cause issues.
Well,
in
and
the
it's
future.
Also, you know, those unconscious compensations. So if I've just, you know, played an hour of tennis and I'm right-handed and I'm using my body in that way, just naturally and unconsciously, I'm going to be shifting my gait so that I'm
big time.
More balanced. And two, like I worked on a woman who was a very high-level tennis player, and it was like her forearm was three times as big on the dominant arm than compared to the other.
Yeah.
So that in itself is going to create a very different body in how you have to hold yourself, because there's not balance. So one side of the body is going to be heavier than the other.
There's literally like density, mass, adhesions. That's just yanking and pulling that arm down, which is going to cause issues with the shoulders, with the neck, with the head, potentially with the spine, the upper back, etc.
So the thing is, again, we want people to be able to do what they love, but understanding what you do and then having complementary activity so that we can undo any potential damage that was created during that process. So that's why things like yoga, Pilates, martial arts, where you're approaching the body from a balance.
Fascia fitness,
absolutely. Fascia decompression, fascia fitness, all of these things where you're teaching the body how to come back into balance is so important. Mm. And even, I mean, I say it all the time, like if you're playing a sport that's one side dominant, practice on the other side. Get that other side of your body used to moving in that similar pattern so that we can create that balance. And that will also help your game as well.
And just to 100% agree with that. And just to ease some people's minds, like I play asymmetrical sports too.
Yep.
I play golf. I love playing golf. And it's something when I'm allowed to in Winnipeg, it's snowing right now, but I play multiple times a week and I really enjoy it. And that's not something I'm necessarily willing to give up. And it's the same thing with bodybuilding. I knew there was consequences to it, but I'm like, I'm going to do this the healthiest way possible. So because I understand what I'm doing to my body, A, I don't feel guilty about doing that, but B, it's being able to know how to unwind and train the body in the other way, in that opposite direction. And sure, if you can play golf the other way, the only issue with that is like you're going to have to buy a whole new set of clubs. But it's even just doing simple things at home where you can create intentional rotation in the opposite direction, creating strength in different areas, and just starting to get the fascia used to different areas of rotation, different areas of how your body is so getting used to that motion. And that creates the muscle memory, but also the fascia memory. And then that's what builds up and can translate into your posture. And then it's circling back to what you mentioned earlier. It's like, well, now you just golfed for 4 hours and you've been doing this for however many years, for however many times a week. It's like your posture is going to start to look like that. And it's going to accumulate. And that gravity you're talking about is going to be building it and locking you in that alignment.
Yeah. And the reality is there's consequences to everything we do. And I mean, like, even think of walking. Like, people think, okay, walking. We all do it. Mm-hmm. Yet, you can walk consciously, or you can just, you know, walk completely unconsciously. And the unconscious walking will create issues for you, where the conscious walking can undo issues, like a bunion.
Right.
For example, if you're walking with that external rotation, and you've got this twisting occurring, the collapsing of that metatarsal joint, and then the buildup of that bunion is really basically frozen proteins, because now that joint's under stress. The body's recognizing it. It's sending inflammation. If we don't utilize that inflammation, it keeps building. And then you think it's this hard thing that's got to be cut off, where in reality, it's frozen. We need to melt it, but we also need to repattern how we're walking so we can actually start breaking it down.
Right.
If we're using our body correctly all the time, then we don't have a buildup. We have balance, and that's the key. We want to try to have that collagen and elastin balance.
Yeah. No, that's a very good point. Because I even noticed for myself, and it's almost embarrassing, but when I was really trying to rebuild my squat, and I'm always rebuilding it, I'm always trying to improve certain movements, of course, but I actually noticed I was developing a little bit of a bunion on my left pinky toe.
Called a bunionette.
Bunionette.
Isn't that cute?
Yeah, the cute version of a bunion. And I'm like, how is this happening? So then I had to reassess. Well, A, the shoes I was wearing wasn't great. Now I wear very flat shoes. I wear Converses, and I personally like them for right now. Before, I know you and I chatted about getting those ones, like those toe ones. And there's some really cool shoes that you can get that I want to experiment with. But I've been loving these because it makes you own your own foot. There's no stability really. So it's, you gotta build up your own stability.
Yeah.
And that made a big difference, but I was just putting too much weight on the outside of my foot, and I could just kind of feel it going like this. And I'm like, what's going on here? So then even when we did our sparkling hill retreat and our block therapy, you know, our BTU workshop here, and just after doing those two retreats, I noticed such a big difference, and all much more awareness in my feet and my toes, and being able to like spread them and move them properly. And it changes everything too. I've also had a severe ankle injury, so I'm sure that contributes to why that was happening. But the point of me saying this, like, nobody's perfect with this. And everything can cause issues, but also everything can reverse those issues. And I love how you said that. So now let's play into the other scenario. So that was somebody who's relatively young, hasn't accumulated much throughout their life yet. They don't have a ton of adhesions. But now, what about those who have, and they've had traumas, they're very compressed, they feel a little locked in their body, literally and mentally?
Well, they're locked and frozen.
So what would be a really effective protocol just to get people to loosen up these cobwebs, adhesions throughout the day, something they can do so that they can start reversing, I'll call it, the damage that they've done, but to reverse the age we've accumulated in our tissue? I'm sounding redundant, and reverse that.
Yeah. Well, and I loved how after we had shared that podcast about the feet, and we were talking about working between the toes and also between the fingers, somebody had reached out. All they had done was that toe work, the finger work. So basically putting pressure between each toe for 3 minutes, putting pressure between the fingers for 3 minutes, and then connecting to the breath. And she reached out and she said, oh my gosh, my cold hands and cold feet of decades are no longer cold, and my hair stopped falling out. I mean, that shocked me because that's just it. Like, the extremities are so key to what's happening everywhere, because if I take a finger and I twist it, the entire arm twists, right? Yeah. Like, one finger can impact absolutely everything. So to get the extremities freed up and to get heat and life into them while we're turning on that engine in the center, to me, those are the most important things you can do as a starting point. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, with our process, we work through the entire body, because you're going to have adhesions in the tissue, in your thighs and your calf and your joints and everywhere. Because in general, we're colder in tissue temperature. So all of us are colder. If we haven't been breathing optimally from the get-go, we're all colder than we should be. And it's interesting, because I was doing a summit with somebody talking about fertility. And I had never heard this before. She said, because I started talking about the coldness, and she said in Chinese medicine, women that have struggles getting pregnant, they say they have a cold uterus. And I'm like, oh, okay. Mm. I didn't even know that. But there you go. If things are cold, you can't grow life in things that are cold. Mm. Like, you need a certain temperature to cook things, to create things.
Right.
So that's the thing. We all want to start heating up the body through the breath first, which, again, in all of our stuff, we share how to do that, as well as getting those adhesions through the whole body that are riddled throughout the fascia to start to soften, to start to melt. Mm. And it doesn't happen overnight. It's not like we're coming from, like, you know, we're in a deep freeze to suddenly we're in the tropics.
Right.
But we can take those steps. And again, whether you're choosing to change or you're letting gravity pull you, you're going to be changing anyway. Yeah. Every day you're constantly changing. And that's why it's so fascinating, because every moment of the day we're adapting to our postures, to our injuries, to the traumas, to the breath, to how we're breathing, because of course stress affects the breath in general. So as we continue to age, the body keeps stacking more and more and more. And before you know it, and it's funny too, because when I'm looking at a lot of bodies doing assessments, sometimes it's hard to decipher what's the driver, what's the anchor, because they're so frozen that they almost look symmetrical until you start melting them. And then the spirals start to undo as they pulling their deeper issues to the surface, because we're starting from this frozen shell, and then we start heating. And then, it's fascinating to watch the changes.
Wow. That is really cool. just being able to see that, like I got such a great visual as you were explaining that, and it makes total sense. So also I like the combination of movement, I think is great, because sure, I mentioned that earlier, like, okay, it depends what kind of movement, but if it's some sort of intentional movement, yeah, where you're walking consciously, you're doing some form of like mobility or strength exercises consciously while activating the breath properly, the diaphragmatic breath while doing all this. Yeah.
Well, it's just so funny because, I mean, I'm pretty sure I broke it. I didn't go get it checked, but I'm pretty sure I broke my finger last week when I was, you know, when we rush, when we're not conscious, mm-hmm, that's when we injure ourselves.
Yeah.
And so I'm coming off of the airplane. It's 3 a.m. I've waited over an hour for my bag to come. So I just want to grab it and go home and go to bed. So now, like right at the part where the suitcase is coming off and then coming down, I'm thinking, oh, I'm just going to grab it on its descent.
Yeah.
I'm going to grab it right at the handle, carry it. And it was probably, you know, it was definitely over 50 pounds because it was a heavy one. And now it's coming down at a force. I don't grab it. I get it slammed. And then I'm just like tears immediately because it just was, you know, it was like I took a hammer to the, yeah, end of my finger. Then I try to grab the thing with my other hand because now it's moving away from me and I've got blurry eyes because I'm like crying, and I basically rip this nail off and I just look at the guy beside me and I'm like, can you please help me, like I'm useless right now. But that's what happens when we, jeez, rush. Yeah. So like, you know, I tried to just get out of there too fast, and now I slowed myself down,
yeah,
and I'm still healing, but it's, yeah, pretty fast actually.
Yeah,
but either way, and by the way, what I've been doing since it happened was working it. Like, I didn't stop using my hand.
Jen, what I want to transition into that,
okay,
because we briefly touched into it, but earlier in this episode, inflammation is sent to an injury on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
Now, many people, I think the narrative is changing slightly around
ice.
You should be icing it all the time, yeah, to maybe that isn't the most advantageous thing to do. So what do you see on with the idea of inflammation to, let's call it, an acute injury? And how do we deal with that inflammation to actually recover an injury as fast as we can?
So the first thing that I made sure I was doing was breathing, because again, the breath is going to be the mobility, but I also brought pressure to the area because pressure overrides pain. And I mean, when you're dealing with, again, like, if you've got a fracture, like, you know, you've broken your arm and it's looking like it's in half, of course, you go to the hospital and you do what you got to do.
Yeah.
But I knew, I didn't know for certain how bad this was. All I knew, it was excruciating. So I started with pressure. And I mean, the lightest pressure in the beginning was painful, but pressure overrides pain. So then before I knew it, I had more pressure. And then I was moving the hand and it felt, you know, stiff, like I couldn't bend the finger normally. Yeah, yeah. But then, you know, like I just kept going. And then I was blocking, like, you know, the channels to make sure my arm was open to keep that flow going. And that was really the process that I took. And it's been a week. And I mean, I've been working with it as well. So I couldn't have worked with my fingers for the first 3 days, like on clients, as an example, because I mean, even moving my hand through water caused pain. But by day 4, I was working. And I mean, it wasn't pain-free, but I was able to do it. Mm-hmm. And then even after working, it felt better because I was using it and I was, you know, putting energy into it, because the body wants to, like, cells want to be where they're supposed to be. Mm-hmm. So if I froze it and, you know, let the scar tissue take over, it wouldn't have healed this quickly, and it might have healed incorrectly. Like when they splint your wrist or something, you break your hand and they splint. I've had so many clients that have had, you know, broken arms or something where they've been in a cast and then the cast comes off and it didn't heal right.
Yeah.
Because it's been immobilized for,
yeah,
4 weeks, 6 weeks, 8 weeks, whatever it is. And also imagine the compensations that have to occur when you're not using something. Your whole body, now you've got the adhesions forming throughout the whole body because of those compensations.
So the whole idea is, when there's an injury, our body knows there's an injury. So it's sending inflammation to that injured site.
Yeah.
And the inflammation has all of the healing minerals, proteins, everything we need to rebuild it how it should be, back to normal. Now,
I just want to preface by saying, yes, however, you know, if you're really, really, really unhealthy, Like if you haven't been eating properly at all for a long time, I mean, you know, we have what we need in our body. Our body creates most things that it needs. Certain things we actually need to take. Like we don't make vitamin D. We get vitamin D from the sun. We don't make vitamin C. We have to take vitamin C. So we need to understand, you know, what's required for healthy eating, which at least in, you know, our part of the world, people do, even though most people are eating the wrong things because that's convenience food. Mm-hmm. We have knowledge, though, as to what to put in the body. But the body itself knows what it needs to do, and it will take those building blocks and direct in that blood flow what that tissue needs to heal.
So the healthier your blood is, the healthier and probably the quicker that an injury will repair itself too.
Yeah.
I've actually never thought of that before.
But the healthiest that your blood will be is if you're a correct breather, because that's the only way to clean the body efficiently and to feed the body efficiently the most vital nutrients that it needs.
The other stuff is kind of like a cherry on top, but a little bit more than a cherry on top.
Yeah.
So injured, inflammation is sent to that area. It's all the healing, brilliant stuff. I'll just simplify it. And the idea is to rebuild it to become either
good as new.
Good as new, sometimes even
better.
Stronger.
Yep.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And then the idea of ice is to reduce the inflammation, because the inflammation can be painful. It can slow down the mobility, just like what you said with your finger. But really, you're slowing down the healing. If the inflammation is what carries all the healing gold, then if you're intentionally applying ice, then you're literally slowing down, if not blocking, that healing fluid to rebuild it properly.
And then if that's the case, because your body's still saying, well, this still hasn't healed the way it should, so it's going to keep sending inflammation. So here we've set
then
the course for chronic inflammation.
And chronic inflammation.
Totally. Yeah. And then it becomes acidic, and then it starts to break down other cells. And then that's where we really get caught in this, like, what is happening to my body? Like, my immune system shutting down. I'm being given all these crazy names. Like, is it what, fibromyalgia? Or, I mean, there's so many different terms depending on what exactly is happening.
Right.
But essentially, that's what's going on, is your body's confused because it's lost its ability to self-directed healing.
And it's probably exhausted.
Oh, totally.
Having to constantly, on a seems like a 24-hour basis, has to put some attention to that unhealed injured site.
So, you know, it just super simply, like, here we are sitting in your home, and here's a big window, and it's snowing outside, and it's not that cold, but if it were minus 30, you could have absolutely everything you need in this house, like really good water, a whole bunch of healthy fruits and vegetables, everything you need for your health. But if that window breaks and it's minus 30 and you can't cover it up and you can't heat what's inside, everything inside's going to die.
Yeah.
Because the container broke. So when it does come down to it, making sure that that container is looked after, that's the key, because that's what keeps the space inside safe.
Right.
Now, you might have an unhealthy space inside. You know,
right.
Maybe you're partying all the time, and you got crappy food, and you got, like, you know, tequila bottles and booze everywhere. And, like, I mean, you're smoking.
Hey,
and all
tequila's
those
not the worst one.
I'm just saying, should
be white wine and Prosecco.
There you go. But either way, I mean, you know, what's inside is less relevant when that window breaks and it's
right.
minus 30.
Yeah. Yeah. Say that last line again. Sorry.
No matter what's inside the space.
Yeah.
Healthiest, unhealthiest.
Yeah.
If that window breaks and it's minus 30, it doesn't matter if it's healthy or not. Everything inside
right.
dies anyway.
Got you.
It's like the eggshell. You crack the shell.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if it's an organic, healthy, free-range chicken or whatever.
Right.
It's you've broken the shell and now it's just a puddle.
Yeah. Wow. I don't have any more questions for you.
Nope. I don't have anything more to say.
Okay. Great. Well, that's perfect then. Well, that was a lot of fun. That's such a cool conversation, because so many people have been asking that question, I feel, recently. And it's important because, like, yeah, what really is the difference? And understanding that if we are falling and collapsing into our own space and we're not aware of it, and our signature postures and how those accumulate, well, yeah, they can act very similar to scar tissue. It's a slow-forming scar that can start to riddle throughout the body.
And it's the same building block. Whether it's scar tissue in the moment that it's created, boom, or riddled, it's collagen.
Yeah.
And again, collagen in a balanced way is beautiful. When it becomes putty, that's pretty much what it is in the body.
Yeah.
It's putty, and it doesn't really have much use other than to cause problems.
Totally. Very cool. very cool conversation. Yeah. That was a lot of fun. So if anyone here is like new listening and this just made sense to you and you want to give this a shot, we have our sampler program. It's utilizing a rolled up towel as a tool, 9 videos for $9, just so you can get a little taste of it. There's also videos on our YouTube channel for free using a rolled up towel that you can test out and try. And if you're wanting the actual real deal, that's Block Therapy. That's the Block Therapy Starter Program. You can find that on our site. And other than that, if you want to join our Facebook community group, that's a great place to just go and ask questions. There's a lot of people in there now. Just type in Block Therapy Community in Facebook. And other than that, I think that's it.
Also, just to give people, the last podcast that we did really took a deep dive into the block therapy practice, if they're wanting to learn more about that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's literally the previous episode to this one. Deanna and I were able to chat about how block therapy actually started.
Yeah.
And that is really cool. We did mix in a little bit of the business talk, which I thought was it was great. It was a very fun, lax conversation. And that will just give people an understanding of what is block therapy and why are we doing it? Why is this our mission? So that's everything for this episode. We'll see you next week.